Hi, this is Frank Pomerico, and you are listening to Jackson Today on Good Shepherd Catholic Radio. Today we are in Studio B with our very special guest, Brother Francis Balin. Brother Francis has led a very exciting and productive life, making the world a better place through love and development of safe facilities for young people throughout the world. Today, Brother Francis is going to inform us of his life work and how he has affected many people in a positive way. Brother Francis, welcome to Jackson Today.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I understand that you spend a lot of time at Notre Dame, and I'm very familiar with that as well. So it's good to have somebody that understands what the university is all about.
Yes, men of hope to bring.
Yes.
Spezunica.
What I do every day, brother, is I walk my two dogs there. I have Bo, who's a poodle, and his son is Patty. Patty's a labradoodle. And we walk all over the campus, and it's amazing the people we meet there. A lot of people come from out of town, especially this time of year in the summer. And it's always fun to talk to them about the university and about how great of a place it is. But the thing that's so special are really the people that go to Notre Dame and make it a special place. Not so much the buildings. The buildings are beautiful. The grounds are beautiful. But it's the people that have that underlining theme and mission of making the world a better place, which is so important. And, brother, you are a big part of that, too. I'd like to talk to you today about some of your background first and then maybe get into a little bit or more about your life's work. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Michigan,
okay.
Grosse Pointe, Michigan, so it's fun to be back in the country today.
Right. And you're around the east side of Detroit, is that?
East side of Detroit.
Okay.
Called Grosse Pointe Farms. All right. Small.
And where is the grade school you went to there?
Grosse Pointe Farms was called, it's still called St. Paul's on the Lake School. At that time, the parish also had a high school. So grade school and high school at St. Paul's on the Lake. And I'll have to share, the students there, the 6th and 7th graders, now can virtually communicate with my 6th and 7th graders in Bangladesh.
Oh, yes, that's right, with FaceTime and all that kind of technology nowadays. Yes. It's pretty amazing stuff. So then where did you go to high school?
St. Paul's.
Okay, so you just moved right into the high school area
next
there.
Floor.
And what was the religious group that was teaching there?
Adrian Dominican Sisters.
Oh, okay.
Adrian, Michigan.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting because, you know, you don't see too many nuns that are teaching nowadays like they did in the 40s and 50s when I was in grade school. I think we had one lay teacher and the rest were all nuns. Mm-hmm. I'm from New York City in Brooklyn, New York, in Queens, and we had Ursuline nuns.
Okay.
And I talked to my 7th grade teacher, Sister Jerome, not too long ago, and she told me that they're closing the order because they haven't very many recruits lately. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that has kind of dissipated over the years, but it was a really great group of gals that used to teach us. We loved them. They loved us. They were strict.
Sure.
They were kind of like the DIs in the Marine Corps in some ways. But I tell you what, you knew your subject matter, and they were fun people to be around, too.
And we could even do cursive.
Yes, yes. You know what's interesting? You mentioned that because I was at the pharmacy, and the pharmacist said, "Would you sign this?" And I said, "Sure." I signed it. He says, "You went to Catholic schools, didn't you?" I said, "Why do you say that?" He says, "Not many people have handwriting so controlled as you do." I said, "Well, if I went outside the lines, I'd get my knuckles whacked." Yes, so I didn't like that. But so then you had a calling to join a religious group. What happened at that point?
Well, my story would be probably two things. In school, I'll give credit to Mary Knoll.
Okay.
Oftentimes, we saw movies from the Mary Knoll fathers and brothers, serving kids, flies on their eyes, and haven't eaten.
Right.
So that attracted me. Then, halfway through high school, I'd often go to Mass at the Capuchin Monastery with my grandmother, who was a Third Order Franciscan. Father Solanus Casey, who is now a blessed in the Catholic Church, one day he did ask me what I considered being a priest. And I kind of said I thought it was a bit too boring. At that time, priests only prayed in Latin,
right,
etc. So he said, well, think about being a brother. I really never heard of brothers before. So I met some of the brothers, and they shared their mission of service. And I thought, that's really what I would like to do. Mm-hmm. So if I jump ahead, I offered to join. My parents said after high school, if I was interested, they'd be very supportive. In high school, when the sister counselor asked them, what was I planning to do? They mentioned he thought of being a brother. She happened to be a Notre Dame graduate.
Oh.
She got her doctorate from Notre Dame. She knew Holy Cross. I was in the teacher group. And so she said, tell him to join Brothers of Holy Cross. So that's
go.
All.
Yeah.
I say, that's my mustard seed.
Gotcha.
At that point in history. Didn't know Holy Cross, didn't know many brothers, and I learned that at a Sunday morning donut hour.
So then after high school, mm-hmm. you join the brothers.
Yes.
And then you eventually get a chance to go to college.
Yes.
And that's when you picked St. Ed's. Why did you pick St. Ed's?
Well, just for kind of a human reason.
Yeah.
Living in Michigan, I knew the temperature in Indiana. I thought the farthest I might ever get in my life is Texas. Let me go to Texas. So the brothers agreed and sent me to St. Edward's University, Austin, Texas.
Right. And did you enjoy St. Ed's?
Yes. There were approximately 150 brothers in the scholasticate studying there at that time.
Gotcha.
So.
And then after a period of time, a year and a half or 2 years, you decide to move up to Wisconsin on a mission.
Yes.
Can you explain that? Where in Wisconsin?
The town was Watertown, Wisconsin. And the movement really was, we were always asked each year, how do we really wish to serve the church?
Right.
And I had shared, I really hope to serve the church with kids who don't have parents, homeless, etc. So kind of amazingly, and I'm very grateful, because sometimes you give suggestions to leaders, and there's never a connection between your suggestion and reality.
There you go. Yes, yes.
So I was surprised the next semester they asked me to go to Sacred Heart Military Academy. Was a grade school for several kids from Mexico City that would come here to kind of integrate in America. So it was a 5th to 8th boarding school with a military structure. So I went there to teach science.
Well, were those kids from a single parent background or no parents?
Not as necessary. They were just trying to integrate into America.
Gotcha. So a lot of them were from foreign countries.
Well, mostly just Mexico City.
Just Mexico.
Yes.
I see. Did you have to learn how to speak Spanish?
We did.
Oh, very good.
We did have to learn Spanish.
Yes. And nowadays, boy, that comes in pretty handy.
But luckily, they came to learn English.
Okay.
So we could be a little stronger on, you only speak English here.
Yes.
Because your parents sent you here. And at that time, supposedly Wisconsin being a bit centralized, the language you could share throughout the United States.
Sure.
There wasn't a strong accent.
Right, right. Yeah, not like Chicago or New York, or something, or
Nashville.
Nashville, something down south would be tougher to understand the English in that way, or they would have sounded like them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I one time talked to a fella who was born in Miami, and I said, "Are you from New York?" He says, "No." He says, "I was born in Miami, and I'm Cuban."
Mm-hmm.
And the language I learned was English in Miami. But I learned from New Yorkers how to speak. And he sounded like he was from New York, which I thought was kind of interesting, especially in what you're saying now. So in Wisconsin, you have a very basic accent, mm-hmm. a Midwest accent, which is something most people will understand. Well, then after Watertown, you were there for only a year or so?
Yes.
And then you go back to Michigan, where you're from?
Yes.
And then you start a new project there. And what was the name of that project?
And that project was called Boysville of Michigan. It had been started in about 1948, but they were looking for brothers to continue that project. So what was kind of unique about this project, it was a joint effort between the bishops of Michigan. Cardinal Mooney had a dream that all of Michigan should focus on people with skills to really help folks. Because there were so many needs, but this group, that group. So he said, let's really get a group, define a problem, and then set up programs that are connected to that specific problem. So he started it. Henry Ford I donated his trade school to the cardinal. Then they both said, who can we get to manage this group? So they asked Knights of Columbus of Michigan to fund it. The Knights visited other Holy Cross schools that serve homeless kids, parents. Father G. Bolt in Indiana, Terre Haute, St. Charles, Milwaukee. So they saw the brothers had an expertise in this ministry. Right. So that's how they asked Holy Cross to come to manage and teach it.
Now, Boysville kind of grows, too, around the state, doesn't it?
Yes, because it was owned by the Church of Michigan. We had centers serving kids in each diocese. Because part of the goal was to set up centers so local people could get involved in helping local children. So sometimes, you know, if it's a ministry, our good friends at Boys Town, everyone knows Boys Town's a good thing. But our mission was trying to get local people to understand there's poor children in their neighborhood.
Sure.
An example I give, in Michigan, we have a town called Frankenmuth.
Right.
It's very famous for chicken dinners.
Right.
It's a wonderful little town.
Yes.
Mr. and Mrs. Zinder, when I went there to discuss opening a home for kids, it's always extremely confrontational. Most people do not welcome a home for children from different ethnicities. Kids who were homeless might be troublemakers, etc. Mr. and Mrs. Zinder came and spent a day with our kids in Saginaw, which is about 2 hours away. They came back and said, no, our kids here need a program like that. So they helped us purchase a house to care for kids, and they then actually hired the kids to help out to work in the restaurants.
Very good.
So it became a great partnership.
Yes.
And in fact, Mrs. Zinder at Christmas time would come and teach the kids how to cook the Christmas meal. She'd spend Christmas Day with our kids teaching them how to cook.
So what was provided at Boysville was a place to live?
Live, high school education.
Okay.
And not to get too technical, but traditionally Catholic sisters could run orphanages, But for boys, they could only care for them up to sixth grade.
Right.
So then he asked a high school for boys, so he started at sixth grade.
Gotcha.
So the orphan kids from different orphanages from throughout the state then had a place to go to high school.
So in the high school, was it other things that they learned, other skills maybe like to be a welder or a carpenter, or did they offer those kind
yes.
of things as well? Because, you know, so many times kids, college isn't for everybody.
Yes, yes.
And if they learn a skill, electrical work or plumbing, I mean, they're almost like doctors nowadays
sure.
when you think about it. I mean, they have such a skill. All they need to know is how to be personable and in dealing with people that are in the public.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, they're making all kinds of money because of their skill
sure.
that nobody knows
sure.
except them or a few people. So this was a great thing for you guys to be able to do for them.
And in, I'll say, Michigan, but every major city had a car industry.
Right.
So many of the kids, we worked with them, and they said, if you help teach the kids these skills, we can hire them in the car industry.
Right.
Now, as you say, today, wow, that's a great paying job. At that point in history,
for sure.
it might have been an entry-level job. Now, what we did with the universities, I would say, the latter years, because kids came to us every day. School went all year round.
Okay.
So eventually, the school also was technical. Each kid was tested. If you know multiplication, you started on the computer learning division. Your spelling test each week was only the words you misspelled.
I see.
So our commitment was that for every year living with us, because so many kids hadn't gone to school earlier, you would gain 5 years. So we would test the kids, and I'll say at least 90% of the kids gained 5 years educational experience living with us 1 year. But basically, because of technology, they all had their separate individual. And now, of course, that's just common. But back then, that was very unusual.
Brother, it seems like every state should have a Boysville.
Mm.
You know, where everybody could feel like they're part of a family. That sounds like what it was,
mm-hmm.
Or what it still is in mm-hmm. some capacity.
Yes.
But it's something that kids that don't have a solid family background, to be able to be part of something like this is just huge.
It's huge.
It's where our society is failing in a lot of ways.
Well, today, I think this is maybe an exaggeration, but more than 80% of American kids do not live with both parents.
I would say that's probably pretty close.
I mean, so when we think of a culture of kids who don't even have educational opportunities, family love opportunities, that's going to affect the society.
Absolutely.
So we do have to really look at that model. And you just used the word, I always say, Jesus and Saint John called us friends. That's all we're trying to do.
Right.
Let's just talk to each other. Just right. say hello. Just say thank you. Let's just be friends. Businesses now are friends. You know, you go to restaurants where you know people. You go to work where you trust. So the whole concept of forming friends.
Well, brother, at some point, you go back to school and go to the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you study there?
So actually there, because I'd worked at Boysville really as a biology teacher, the principal at that time really did suggest he needed now brothers more trained in social work and psychology. So besides just teaching the kids, we had to kind of learn to understand their experiences. So in those days, they just said, this is your responsibility. I'm sending you to University of Michigan to get a degree. And so I got that privilege, I will say, which was such a mustard seed, because later on, as we diversified services needed for kids, I needed that kind of certification so we could supervise interns. We developed our own research institute affiliated with five universities, because the bigger mission then moved into, how do I get the church, psychologists, and legal folks to talk? Mm-hmm. How do I get them to talk to figure out how do we really solve a problem, if it's a problem, for all these future homeless kids? Because for the most part, judicial system is very isolated. The church is isolated. These kids don't go to church, etc. And I say that because kind of an example, when we say homeless, technically they legally have to be homeless. I can't just go on. And what I learned different time with judges, if a child wasn't going to school, he was in trouble. But if he went to court and both his parents were there and they said, we're going to make sure he goes to school, he'll never miss again.
Right.
Jed said, okay, if one of our kids was there who was skipping school, somehow trying to make money to feed his mom or his newborn sister,
right,
he was like nobody there to defend him. So hopefully the judges also are saying, you need a supportive environment. Some were just saying, you broke a rule, you have no home, I'm going to send you away. So some would go to the public. There were public schools similar.
Well, the whole idea of the family atmosphere you're developing at Boysville,
yes,
is so badly needed.
Well, we call it the friendship atmosphere.
Yeah.
How do you form friends today?
Right. And when you form friends, you know that they're good people. They're not people that are looking for somebody to move drugs for them or to go in the back alley and drink or something to that effect. And do any of these Boysville have competitive sports involved with them?
Yes. We did very well in sports. We were a small school, so we were probably kind of Class D.
Right.
But our kids were strong.
Yeah.
So we actually did well in football and programs like that.
You know, they're accomplishing something. They mm-hmm. feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. They have pride.
Mm-hmm.
The coaches are making them disciplined. And the coaches are probably fair with them. And when you're fair with people, you get loyalty back. So you have those three avenues that are learned at Boysville. So that's a huge thing when the kid finally graduates and is on his own, whether he's in college or he gets a job in an automotive or some kind of industry, plumbing, electrical work, whatever it is. He is prepared now because he understands the three, you know, the pride, the discipline, and loyalty that are so important in a regular society, which you would usually get when your parents are involved.
If
your parents are not involved, that lacks. And usually there's people that are negative people mm-hmm. that are looking to dominate those young people. So it was such a huge thing that you guys did there. So now how long did...
Well, let me just share this.
Oh, sure.
What was cool in the family atmosphere was, what were the skills? Some kids were good readers. Some kids came as good basketball players. Some kids came as swimmers. So we made sure the reader and the basketball player hooked up.
Okay.
So now the reader is learning to read. The basketball kid, hey, you taught me. I never heard of a basketball. I got my first ball in the rim. Most people hardly knew swimming at that point. We had a swimming program. The concept was to build trust and confidence in yourself. So the few kids that learned to swim were the lifesavers. So part of the culture was, oh, Johnny taught me to read. Bill taught me to play basketball. Gary taught me to swim. So it really brought that family
atmosphere
together, yeah. Not yes. just talking about it, but yes. they all knew.
So they were depending on each other.
Yeah. And so if there was a basketball game, all the kids could be there. And I taught him. And I should,
yes,
you know,
right.
their hearts.
Yeah.
So that became, again, a very...
You got a stronger group together, stronger friends.
And back to service, because as you said, as you expand in the world, how do you become friends? Well, they became friends. I still talk to kids. Oh, yeah, Bill taught me basketball. He's my friend. We still talk to each other.
Right.
So that's how you form friends. I say, just say hello to people, say thank you, and people are in shock. Almost in America, you say hello. Why is he saying hello to me? I don't know who you are. So it's almost, yeah.
Well, you know, some people, it's so foreign to have manners. And that's probably something you guys taught all the time. You say please and thank you. And, you know, that seems kind of rudimentary, but kids that don't have parents don't do that, mm-hmm. just off the cuff. So if a nun or a brother yeah. is teaching them to do those simple mm-hmm. things, mm-hmm. thank you, yes, sir, no, sir. I mean, that's all part of growing up, and it's good
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. You know? And you mentioned one of our programs was named The Samaritan. And I shared that just because we've all been in the ditch.
Sure.
So we talk, the priest walked by, he was probably trying to get to Mass on time. The business guy had a big contract. But who's the guy who walked by and stopped and said, hello, are you hungry? Well, he could do that because we've all been lonely. God's
right.
taught us how to be friends.
Right.
We've all been lonely. We've all been hungry. We've all been, you know, what's our future?
Yeah.
So the Good Samaritan story in our main campus was called Samaritan just because, like you said, and it was a kind of a joke, but we did talk about how many people did you say hello to today?
Yeah.
Or did you even once today say, I'm sorry? Oh, my God. Nobody says that. So, but I say that because we, as people who serve, we learn to serve not by my psychology degree. I learned to serve by the person who offered me a cookie, who offered to help me play basketball, who offered, etc. So it's kind of such a basic concept that's sometimes overlooked. I say, we all know the Samaritan story, but I don't hear that many people say, I was in the ditch when I learned now to become a serving person because of that experience.
Can you explain a little bit about the Holy Cross Children's Services?
It's an evolution. So we started out as Boysville, thinking we were smaller than Boys Town. So Boysville. So that worked. But then you had mentioned that there's several smaller religious communities. So almost all the girls' programs like us closed. So we were asked then, would we serve girls? Being a sensitive person, I thought they don't want to wear Boysville sweatshirts.
Right.
So we named it Holy Cross Children's Services because now we're offering many services besides just education. So some of our bigger services had free clinics. Some of them had a place for grandma to live. Grandma didn't have a place. Grandma come and live with us so Johnny can go to school. I was known for opening the brother to open the first beauty parlor.
Okay.
We set up that. So because people, to help people get jobs, we gave them clothes, self-confidence. We have beauticians come and make them feel good. So when you go to an interview, so we had doctors and dentists and lawyers working together to help the kids and what the family needs were. And with our girls, several came pregnant, so we had children. So our schools ended up from 4 weeks old could come to school. And one of our oldest volunteer lived with us in the nursing senior village was 102.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So, again, just the community coming together. And all the kids had to take turns in school during recess break, holding the 4 and 5. They all knew the first kid who could start walking. Our kids were teaching the kids how to talk, it becomes kind of a fun experience.
But what a need that you're filling. I mean, it's just unbelievable that you're able to help these people in such tough times and helping them, groom them to the point where they can go out and be a productive adult on their own. You know, this is tremendous stuff.
And we know we receive so much more than we give. So I might be told I was helping them. They helped me far more than I helped them in terms of life. The joy of serving.
Sure. Yes.
The joy of being a disciple.
Yes.
Because I sometimes say, most people are never quite happy. I'll be happy next week if I win the lottery. I'll be happy next week if. But I see joyful. I can see joy in your eyes who think of other people, who think of loving their neighbor. So I can see joyful disciples. And that's what we're trying to...
To make a difference in other people's
lives. The world.
Yes. Samaritan Center in East Detroit.
Yes.
Is that part of your project as
that
well?
That was, yes.
Okay. Is that all part of Holy Cross Children's Services?
It was all part. They've adjusted it now, but it was managed at that time.
Yeah. Okay. So how long did you actually spend at
almost
Boysville?
50 years.
So from 1970 to 2020?
About 1965.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that is a long time.
Goes quickly.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, you got your degree at the University of Michigan in social work or in psychology?
Both. Yeah.
Okay, super.
Yeah.
Boy, I mean, what a great tool to have when you're dealing with these kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
The knowledge that you can make somebody feel positive about themselves by the way you act.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's huge. That's instead of just saying, that guy will never make it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a tremendous gift that you have, brother. I mean, it's really good.
And what I was lucky back to Mustard Seeds and Service, I'd mentioned I had studied biology.
Right.
So my internship was in hospitals. So I was the medical social work psychologist, which again, talk about service in the emergency room, seeing little babies come in with a broken leg, whatever. So just the opportunity, again, to hold people's hands when the anesthetist was taking over. I mean, and again, I got the joy out of really helping these folk. So that was another amazing learning experience. It wasn't so much just in the classroom, but in the emergency room of a hospital, being the medical social worker.
Do you see the students that you worked with go ahead in the years to come to be similar in helping other people?
I believe so.
Okay.
'Cause what is a common thing in still talking to kids who live on the streets today, they tell me, when I have kids, I want to be a father.
Right.
Because I never had, as a new experience, I think I would really like to be a father. So for part of me, sometimes you hear their life is a circle. So part of the circle was, no, I think I'll be happy not getting married. Kids cost too much money. I need a boat, a car, and a house on the beach.
Right.
We're finding out suicides are higher. It's not making people happier. So my prayer and my hope when I hear younger kids say, hey, if I have kids, I want to be a parent.
Yeah, I want to be a family.
So
yeah.
They're seeing people doing that is more joyful, I'll say, than people just having a house and a boat.
Sure. Now, brother, at a certain point after Boysville, you leave Boysville, mm-hmm. you get an opportunity to go overseas, mm-hmm. and you go to Africa.
Yes.
Tell us about that project a little bit.
Well, Holy Cross Brothers, lots of different places. So friends in Ghana, brothers, said, would you ever come excuse me, and help us build a school? Because we really would like to build a private school so we can become self-sustainable. So one of our brothers, I say the first male saint born in North America, Brother Andre Bisset, we dedicated this school to him. So it is St. Andre School in Ghana. So, and it's doing very well. So they built a school equally, and a dorm for 500 boys, dorm for 500 girls. So it's co-ed serving the community.
Is it basically Christians or Catholics, or are there Muslims involved?
I would say all the religions would be welcome.
Good.
They know it's a Catholic school.
Yeah.
And in West Africa, the kids still would go to church services because it's part of the message. Mm-hmm. And in Ghana, it's quite Christian. What confused me when I first went there, almost every church had a saint's name. They were not Catholic, but they still had St. Patrick. And I was just presuming they weren't Catholic. But in those countries, Christianity is a little more uniform. I say that just in the concept of their churches all would have crucifixes.
Right.
In America, where there was kind of a separation, you wouldn't expect a non-Catholic church to have a crucifix.
Right.
That was a Catholic.
Yeah.
So there was more. But there, the theology is kind of the same for everyone.
That sounds like it's a little healthier, actually.
Yeah, I mean, back to loving your neighbor as yourself. That's,
yes,
let's,
I like that idea.
Let's focus on that, that concept.
Instead of the differences.
Yeah, instead of.
And that's a very, very healthy thing. Well, how long are you there in Ghana?
I was there about 3.5 years.
Good experience?
Yes. Well, living with the brothers, just wonderful people, wonderful. And for me, learning new cultures, new ideas. And it's certainly an opportunity to be of service
for sure
to the folks there.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed being of service and reminding them. Because when friends would come, they'd oftentimes say, these kids seem so happy. And I kind of reminded them, for the most part, they still have family in God.
Right.
And you can see in the kids' faces. In fact, a similar thing, talked about moving to Bangladesh. A family came, and again, Bangladesh people are extremely simple.
Yes.
You can't even imagine. If someone makes $1 a day, it's a special day. And one of the kids did say, I'm so amazed how much fun you kind of have together. You seem so joyful. And you really, you know, the houses are made out of palm branches and bamboo. And the mother said, if we weren't happy, we'd have nothing.
That's right.
And I thought, what? I wasn't expecting that response, but
right.
Jesus taught us how to be happy. Mm-hmm. Be friends with other people.
For
be
sure.
Of service to other, yeah. You know.
So I guess you see a little different needs from the people in Ghana, mm-hmm. Than you do maybe in Detroit or in some mm-hmm. of the other. Mm-hmm. But they all need friends.
Friends.
They all yeah. need somebody that will treat them fairly. And work them. They want to be worked. They mm-hmm. want to learn. They want to reach for the stars, so to speak, in a in a sense.
Sure.
They all want to become self-sufficient and have a skill that they can take with them for years to come. That's just huge. What great work you're doing. Brother, you're there at Ghana, and then you get another project started. How does that happen?
Just friends, because when the Ghana school is almost done, friends in Bangladesh said, oh, the bishop there, new diocese, he'd really like to have a Catholic school. Would I come and help? So I said, sure. So we went there and built a Catholic school, first Catholic school in his diocese. So,
well, tell me a little bit about Bangladesh. Is it a rich country?
Well, there's an organization called Global Emotions Report, which you can Google. That report claimed Ghana was one of the saddest countries in the world. And saddest, when I was talking to folks, saddest meant you almost don't have a future. If you study, there's still not jobs. There's still not. So in that sense, it's different. So they're still working hard to develop the country. As you might have noticed, the last month or so, there's been a lot of turmoil in the country. And that was basically based on being a new country. All government jobs, including policemen, soldiers, you had to be related to a veteran in the war. Well, now there's so many kids, not veterans, but they had no opportunities for jobs. So students kind of rebelled.
Well, can you give us an idea? How big is Bangladesh?
They say it's the size of Illinois,
okay,
with almost 170 million people.
Wow, that's packed.
The capital city, they'll say, has 20 million people.
That's a lot of people.
But back to the kids appreciating services, I'll pick on the University of Notre Dame there. When they have openings, they have to close all the main areas. They'll get 30,000 applicants.
Wow.
And a mom or a relative comes with you. So there's about 60,000 people in line, and we have openings each year for 3,000 kids.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And that's true. Most of our high schools, the numbers aren't quite that big, but we'll get 2,000 or 3,000 people to apply for maybe 500 openings. So the people, I want to say, know enough now with technology. I have to get some education. My dream is to go to America or London. But to go there, you need some education.
Right.
But there's still very limited educational opportunities. In fact, the next project we have is in the Hiltrack region. So the little kids who were there before it became a country don't know the language, just farm. There's not schools. There's not medical care. So the bishop did say, would we ever consider? So I said, well, I'm not sure, but I'll share it with my friends in the United States. Here's a goal. So there, it's kind of unique because we were given, purchased 20 acres of land from Muslim group. But the idea was we would build a vocational school. So they gave us permission to purchase this land. So we'll build a vocational school, girls for sewing, boys carpentry and welding, and a place particularly for Catholic kids to have a place to live. Because when you're such a small minority, you're 0.03% of the country, they don't have Santa Claus. They don't have Christmas shopping, etc.
3% of the
0.03.
0.03.
Now
is
that
Christian.
Ends up being 600,000 Catholics.
Okay.
So part of us having them come to really understand, really nurture their faith. So we always have a special dorm for the Catholic kids, just to nurture their faith.
Brother, what other religions are involved in this, in Bangladesh schools that you're talking about?
Mostly just going to be 90% Hindu, or excuse me, 90% Muslim, 5% Hindu, maybe 1% Buddhist, the rest Christian.
So the idea is to help them all blend together and get along.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Love their neighbor. Yeah.
Love their neighbor is the theme.
Mm-hmm.
And that's and where they can help each other and make a difference in each other's
life.
Yeah.
And my personal belief is by doing this, everyone is going to have eternal life, even after we die. Until the last judgment, we have a free will, and we can choose to accept Jesus' message of happiness or not. So I view at this time, let's introduce them. Maybe they're not ready to convert because of family or other religions to have eternal life.
Right.
So that's kind of the goal, just to introduce them to this model.
Right.
So who knows, maybe we call it purgatory. Later on,
yeah,
you might meet Jesus and say, oh, I heard about you.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I really like the idea, though, that you're helping them blend in this earth.
Right.
And you're teaching them to get along and be friends and be family and help each other. All that is great. I mean, the idea of religions being able to interact like that and help each other, it's almost like, the religion part, we're all human.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a universal needs. We all are sad. We all are happy.
Yeah.
We all have hunger. We all are thirsty. So to be able to fulfill those needs and get along together is so key.
Right.
That's a tremendous project you're doing there.
And so what we have, which I sometimes want to have a contest, we're tabernacles. Christ lives within us.
There you go. Right.
We have the power to go out and be Jesus to people.
Sure.
To be service. So I had a little contest the other day, just kidding, but I was asking husbands and wives, can you tell the difference the day your husband goes to communion and the day he doesn't? Is he any more Jesus-like? The day we go to communion, or is it just something we do? Yeah, we believe it, we do it, we have to get to brunch. Or do you really see, as I say, we should all be carrying a vigil light? Do you really see? So I do ask most places I go, if someone sees us, can they tell Jesus is living in you?
Mm-hmm.
Or they can't tell anything any different? So everything you've been sharing is that concept, forgetting politics, forgetting cultures, and I'll share that maybe as the last point, but I just think Jesus, we hear people say, Lamb of God, Lamb of God. We don't think Lamb means you're going to be slaughtered. Jesus knew he was going to be slaughtered. So yesterday I was 1,000 people, and I was asking them to be missionaries. And then I shared with them the day Jesus, before the ascension, came back to the apostles and asked them, will you be lambs? Will you go out to various faraway places? And the apostles all looked, you're really asking us to go out and get killed.
Right.
Now, Jesus said, you know, don't go as wolves. We all know a few friends who come back as wolves. This is what you're supposed to do. No, no. Just go out as a human being, teachable, vulnerable, loving. And unfortunately, all the apostles did get killed except St. John. But so when I was inviting people to join me as missionaries, I said, it is because the first question is, what is the food like in Bangladesh? Is it safe to live there? And the very few say, can I be of service? They're like, you know, I'm just kidding. So that whole concept of where can we be of most service with our talents. But that's probably the biggest question I ask people. And even though people chuckled, and I said, and it's such an amazing parish. Your parking lot's empty 5 minutes after the last blessing. You're so enthused to go out and spread the word of God with Jesus in your heart. A lot of people chuckled at that, but just that concept of...
That's a great concept.
We can serve.
Yes. Yes.
So think of yourself as a lamb. You might get slaughtered, but Jesus didn't say, oh, you know, Paul, I like you. Don't go. I don't want you to get killed. He sent them all. He got slaughtered. They all got slaughtered. So, yes, we're lambs. It's just not a nice little title.
Right.
It's a lamb. Go out and serve.
Brother, where can people find out more about your project? Is there a website that they can go to, or a place where they can donate or find become a missionary going over there? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there some place to find out that information?
Yes.
Okay.
And it would be, if they Googled Holy Cross Mission Center at Notre Dame. Because the Mission Center kind of organizes groups to go all the different places Holy Cross goes. You may remember Bingo Bouts.
Oh, yeah.
They just spent the summer in Bangladesh. The team just came, teach the kids boxing. But again, they come back with what amazing experience. And the food wasn't that bad.
That was Father Tom Brennan, if I'm not mistaken. He used to be in charge of that.
Okay.
With the Bengal bouts. That was quite a event.
It's still.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's the girls now.
Nine.
They go to one section of Bangladesh. The boys go to another section. But they visit the kids. So, again, it's an amazing experience. So, but under that, we call it Holy Cross Mission Center, Box 543, Notre Dame, Indiana.
Okay.
Father Tom Eckert is director. So they could contact him if they were particularly interested in knowing how this new Holy Family Vocational School is going or like to get involved with that. He would assist them.
Okay, great. Is there a phone number? Yeah, don't remember that one, huh? Well, you know, we'll try to find that out down the road and put that on there.
Right after. Yeah.
You know, is there anything else you'd like to talk about or mention before we wrap this up?
Well, I guess I would just summarize. We're all called to be missionaries. That may start with your family. It certainly starts how you pray together. And then it certainly starts with materials. How can you clothe people, feed people, etc.?
Yeah.
So I invite everyone to come and visit. The folks, several of my friends have visited, and they all claim they got much more out of it than they thought. So I'm very comfortable in inviting people. So come and visit, pray for us, or help us feed the kids and clothe the kids and
Brother, do
buy
you have
books.
Do you have an email that people can get a hold of you? Or
I do. My email would be Gary, G-A-R-Y, Boylan, B-O-Y-L-A-N, 44 at gmail.com.
Very good. Okay. Well, great. Brother Francis, we here at Jackson Today want to thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to tell us about your blessed life helping people throughout the world experiencing God's love. You truly are an extraordinary human being, and thank you for being here on Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.
Thank you.